This is what summer's all about, I think, right here. This is the best last second call I think we've ever made. This is dope. I'm glad you guys are here. Welcome to Summer Soul. I know I got some people from out of town. This is going to be a good time. So a lot of you guys know I have a lot of nephews, right? I have 8 nephews and a niece all under 7. Yeah, I think they're all 7 and under. It's hard to keep track sometimes. And one thing that me and my nephews have really connected with is sports, right? So I grew up playing sports, whatever. I love sports, and it's really easy to get them excited about sports. So a lot of time, we'll just play sports together. This one particular summer, I got to play a lot of sports with some nephews because I went to Colorado and I lived with them. I lived with my sister Rebecca and her 3 little boys, and every day I'd feel like they would want to, you know, learn from me because I obviously had a lot to teach them with sports, and they wanted to play stuff with me and just spend quality time together like that. And I remember teaching them soccer drills, teaching them how to shoot, teaching them how to dribble, all this fun stuff. And the first day I was there, I knew it was going to be a good summer, guys, because I had a ball at one end of the yard, about a yard about the size of this room. And my little, at the time, like 3-year-old nephew was standing on the other end of the yard. And I was like, hey, Rebecca, or hey, Matt, check this out. And I don't know what was going through my mind exactly, but I just remember knuckling the perfect ball, like one of those just heat-seeking missile-looking shots. I just popped this ball across the yard, and it just domed my nephew so hard in the face that he just gets depleted, right? His feet go up in the air like that. He's like, just hits the ground. I'm like, oh, what's it gonna be? And he starts screaming, like, dang it! Oh, man, bad way to start the summer. You know, we played sports together all summer. By the end of the summer, right? I'm not kidding. That was the first day I was there. Remember, clear as day. Last day I was there, I was playing baseball with the guys, all 3 of the nephews, my brother-in-law, and we were playing like a soft, I think it was like a racquetball or something of that type of softness. And I remember I chased a ball that went down the street, and I was like, I was really far away. So this is actually really impressive, so don't lose sight of that. But I was like, I literally said the same words, like, Matt, check this out. And I saw my nephew standing on, like, just, I mean, really far away, right? And I just wound up, let it go. I'm like, oh, no way. It just domes him in the face again, hits the ground harder than even the first time, just screams and runs inside. And I knew I would just be like his like sports role model forever. I just like in that summer, like implanted my mark on his life. And even to this day, you know, he lives here now. We play soccer together all the time. I try and teach him the best I can. And this past season, guys, he started his first like real season, and it's so cute. Her second real season. It's really funny to watch little kids play soccer and stuff, and just like a mob running everywhere. But I didn't get to go to this game, right? And he wanted me to go, and I felt bad enough, right? I was like, oh man, I love this. This is my first nephew. He's like my little protege. Oh man, like living vicariously through a 6 or 7 year old, and his game didn't go so well, and he lost. Like, who cares? But he cared a lot, and he just bawled, I guess, on the way home, or so I hear. And they're like, what's wrong, Micah? Like, you lost. Like, it's okay, buddy. He's like, I don't want Uncle Rai Rai to be upset with me for losing. And I was like, oh, man, like, that sucks. I just remember feeling like not only did I miss the game, but like, oh, I let him down. And he was afraid that I like disapproved of him because he lost like a 6-year-old soccer game. And he's got it all wrong, doesn't he? Like, of course I don't disapprove of him. Of course the point of his soccer games that you don't keep score, the point's not to win and to make your uncle proud through that. That's not it, but that just reminded me of myself and just how many times in my life I've just gotten it all wrong with wanting to gain the approval of so many different people in my life. When it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't matter. I remember growing up with my best friend down the street. This is a weird thing. We were like first, second grade, and we would wrestle whenever cars came past because we thought that girls might drive past, and we would look like we're fighting and that we were really tough and strong. We literally, my life is marked by searching for approval from people. It's just what I do. It's who I am. It's draining, honestly. It's absolutely exhausting when you stop to think about why would you wrestle in front of a car hoping that a girl would see you? Why would you cry because you lost an unscored soccer game because you want your uncle to think more of you? It's exhausting. I think to a certain extent we can all kind of relate with that. So the text we're going to enter into tonight, guys, is all about one thing. One thing, the approval of God. The approval of God. We want to be people who live for the approval of God. You can open up your Bibles with me to 1 Thessalonians 2. We're not going to have it on the screen, so if you guys want to pull it out and just kind of read along with me, we're just going to study this together and see what it looks like to live for the approval of God. We can see practical ways in which we can do it today, and what I really hope for the end of the night that we can say, I really, really hope this. I want us to be people that really, really, really value and love the approval of God and not the approval of man. So open up 1 Thessalonians 2, be reading verse 1 through 12. For you yourselves know, brothers, that our coming to you was not in vain. But though we had already suffered and been shamefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we had boldness in our God to declare to you the gospel of God in the midst of much conflict. For our appeal does not spring from error or impurity or any attempt to deceive, but just as we have been approved by God, to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak, not to please man, but to please God who tests our hearts. For we never came with words of flattery, as you know, nor with pretext for greed, God is witness, nor did we seek glory from people, whether from you or from others, though we could have made demands as apostles of Christ. But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. For you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. We worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you. But we proclaim to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and God also, how holy and righteous and blameless was our conduct toward you believers. For you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. So if you guys remember last week, kind of where you guys, why we're where we're diving into this text, Paul got chased out of town, right? Paul, Silvanus, Timothy, they were preaching in Thessalonica, and there was a mob that started. A mob started up a riot, and things just got crazy, right? They were rushed out of town, middle of the night. I can't even imagine they had like any time to pack anything or say bye to all these new brothers and sisters, literally brothers and sisters that they had just met, all these new believers in Thessalonica. So we're entering into that right now, where you have to imagine that if you're a Thessalonian at this point, you're thinking, man, Paul just kind of ditched out on us, didn't he? You have to imagine there was some of that talk going on where it's like, was this trip by Paul and his friends a failure? Was it an actually successful trip that they put this much time and effort just to get chased out by an angry mob? Did it work? And Paul, throughout this passage, is reassuring us that, oh yeah, it definitely worked. And maybe not on the account that you think it worked. You know, you're looking at people and numbers and all these things that you want to succeed. But Paul kind of flips the script and says, of course this mission to Thessalonica was not a failure. The whole reason that Paul was even there in the first place was for the approval of God, not of men. So when we see tonight what it looks like to live for the approval of God and the joy that comes from living for the approval of God, I hope it makes us leave here really, really wanting to do so. So we see three things, three ways in which we live for God's approval, and they are boldness, sacrifice for others, and hard work. So let's jump into Paul's first idea. The first idea is that living for God's approval means boldness. Let's look at verse 2 again. But though we had already suffered and been shamefully treated at Philippi, as you know, we had boldness in our God to declare to you the gospel of God in the midst of much conflict. What Paul is really saying in verse 2 is if we were preaching the gospel simply for your approval and to make men happy, we would have given up when we almost got beat to death. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was, this guy is kind of hardcore. If you don't know Paul, he went through a lot of crazy stuff in his missionary journeys. In 2 Corinthians 11, he talks about being shipwrecked 3 times, I think. He was adrift at sea for a day and a night. I don't know what that would look like if he was holding onto a plank or not. I don't know. 5 times, he was whipped to death almost, but they spared him, the one that should have killed him. 3 times, he was almost beaten to death with rods. He said he was in constant danger of men and like friends even. He said that he was in danger of the wilderness. Like, what do you think? Did he have to, like, fight animals? I really don't know, but, like, this dude had a hardcore life as a missionary. And what he's saying here is, I don't do that stuff for the approval of man. That wouldn't make any sense. That would have caused me to give up a long time ago. He's in it for something more. He's in it for the approval of God. And ever since becoming a Christian, right, ever since Paul, you know, was knocked off his horse by Jesus, literally and figuratively, his preaching of Jesus has put him in endless danger. And even more so than that, everywhere he has preached Jesus, people have grown to hate him. What happened when Paul grasped the approval of God in his life was that he was able to speak boldly. He wasn't in it for the approval of men anymore, but he was in it for the approval of God. I was thinking about how to illustrate this. I was thinking about who's a bold speaker. I couldn't use myself because I'm not. And I couldn't think of any of my friends. But I thought of Draymond Green, right? Hang with me, man. Draymond Green is a basketball player for the Golden State Warriors, and I just do not like that guy at all. He is one cocky dude. I don't know if I can go on much more about him before I say something dumb, but that dude gets boldness, right? Like, Draymond Green loves to talk trash, and he loves to yell at people, and he loves to yell at his teammates, and he loves to just open up that big mouth and just be bold on and off the court, and it's really annoying, right? But what Draymond Green does that I am too afraid to do is he's not afraid to make people mad, to stir the pot, to rustle up some feathers. Draymond Green gets boldness in a way that I think a lot of Christians don't. He's not afraid, you know, as he's going on this mission to win NBA championships and to do whatever else he's doing, he's not afraid to make people angry on his way doing it. And I think this is what we all really want in a certain way. We don't want to be cocky like people like Draymond Green necessarily. But when it comes to boldness, we don't want to be fearful people. You know, I think deep down inside of us, you know, we're like, yeah, I don't want to speak up. But there's something inside of you that wants to be bold and strong and sure of yourself. There's something about us, I think, that when we're in a relationship with God and we see other people ruining their own lives, when they're not following God, when they're not living by his word, we want to speak up and say something. But I don't do that. I can just look back on my life and I see so many times in my life, growing up as a believer, man, I've had so many friends that I just haven't shared the gospel with, that I just haven't talked to about God, that I've seen them destroying their life. I've seen them walking down the wrong path. And I just don't really care, is it? I don't speak boldly. I'm too afraid of what people will think about me and too insecure almost that I want their approval. And I'm not looking for God's approval. I think the reason that I struggle with this, or the reason that maybe you can relate with me in this, is because we're just straight up afraid to lose friends, right? A lot of us have come to Christ, you know, maybe let's say midway through high school, midway through college, something like that, where you have a ton of friends, right? You have a lot of friends who are not followers of Jesus. And when you become one, you automatically feel like an outcast. And the last thing in the world that you want to do is speak boldly to them and tell them the truth about the way their life is going. You don't want to lose those friends. You don't want them to think lesser of you. We have this fear that man can actually do something to harm us. And I think one of the biggest ways we see that with, maybe it's Salt coming here, maybe it's just Christians all around America, I don't know. It's that we really, really like being comfortable with our friends, and we don't want to lose them. When we live for the approval of God alone, we are bold and speaking, when we are focused on his approval and not man's. But more than that, Paul goes on to tell us what else a life looks like when we are going at it for God's approval. So along with boldness, living for God's approval means sacrifice for others. All right, look with me at verses 7 and verses 8. But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. So what Paul's saying in these verses is, I loved you guys in Thessalonica. I loved you, man. I loved you so much that my words were not enough. I preached the gospel for you. I loved you so much that that was not enough. I even gave up my own time, my own comfort, and my own safety for you. That's how much I loved you. That's what Paul is trying to get across to these Thessalonians. And this is that same Paul, right? It's interesting language he uses here. It's the same Paul who, you know, survived out in the wilderness and faced hunger and got beat to death almost a bunch of times. And now he's comparing himself to a mother with the Thessalonians on his teat. Like, that's literally what he's saying here, is he's comparing himself to a spiritual mother to these baby Christians in Thessalonica. And it's weird that some guy would ever say that, I think. But I think what he's trying to do is make a very, very strong point. I think what he's really trying to say is, man, we're family, you know? Like, you are a Christian now. Like, I have seen you come from death to life in Jesus. We are literally a part of the same family. We are claiming to have the exact same Father in our God. And because of that, I love you so deeply. So deeply that I'm willing to sacrifice my time. I'm so in love with you that I would give up my comfort and even my safety. Hence, getting run out of town by a mob. I think what was a natural response for Paul is just natural to all of us, or it should be. When you belong to a family, you love one another sacrificially. That's what love is, isn't it? You can't effectively, deeply love somebody without some sort of self-sacrifice. So what does that have to do with living for God's approval? I think God is creating the family. God is creating his family of believers, and he wants us to love one another because he has called us to that family. You know, Paul shared the gospel with them. He saw them essentially be spiritually born. He was walking with them. He was raising them up as mature Christians, kind of like a lot of us have been in Salt Company or, you know, wherever we're at, where we come in and we just don't get it, and we need somebody to walk with us to make sure we grow. It's not an impersonal, hey, I'm happy that you became a Christian, now see ya, game over, good luck on your own. It's affectionate, it's sacrificial, where, no, I saw that you came to life in Christ. I love you because you are my brother or my sister. I want to walk with you deeply into community, deeply, so I can watch you mature, that I can cry with you, that I can rejoice with you, that I can see you. And if that means sacrificing my time, so be it. If that means sacrificing my convenience, or especially my comfort for you, so be it. And I think, you know, laying down your comfort for, you know, somebody in this room, that's awesome. That's great. I think what this makes me think about was the fall retreat this past year. I think a lot of you guys were there. It was cold, and it was like kind of outside or whatever, and just a bunch of us guys, like probably like 12 of us, were like, oh man, how cold is it supposed to get tonight? Somebody's like, think low 30s, and we're like, oh, we got it. Oh, we'll sleep outside. Who cares? We're tough. We'll cuddle if we have to. We'll be all right. So, you know, being a strong band of brothers, we go outside and get in our little sleeping bags with our little pillows, and we attempt to sleep outside. And the forecast was totally dead on, man. It was like definitely low 30s, and that's, I think, with the heat index or something. But, I mean, guys, I fell asleep great. You know, we had a good time, good laughs, real strong family brotherhood, sleepover outside. And I just remember waking up at like 5 or 6 a.m., soaking wet, but not like somebody poured water on me, like I was freezing to death type of soaking wet. Like, like I'm not doing so good soaking wet. Like I looked at my pillow and it was covered in frost soaking wet. And I like feared for myself, man. I was like really scared that I was going to get hypothermia or something. So I realized I'm like really stuck in between a couple guys because naturally I think we all just kind of like came together to survive or whatever. And I got up, right? This is where the story changes. I got up and I took my pillow and I took my my sleeping bag and blanket and I went inside of the heated cabin. And as I looked down, I saw my poor friend Kyle sitting there and I realized he didn't have a blanket anymore because I got up. And I realized he didn't really have much of a pillow either. And he was just open to the elements. And I looked at him and I looked at the cabin and I looked down and I went into the cabin. And I enjoyed, I really, really enjoyed my 2 hours of heated sleep. And I don't need to over-spiritualize this, guys, but it's one of the biggest regrets of my year because I still don't hear the end of that from all the guys who I abandoned, right? That is literally the opposite of what Paul is talking about here. I think what he would get at is that when you become part of a family, when you become a Christian and you are entered into this big, awesome family, is you love one another because God put you in a family together. Therefore, you sacrifice stuff like comfort. You know, we look around this room and it might be like, you know what? I don't really want this to be my family. I don't really get along with the people here. I don't really have the same interests as this crowd. You know, you look around, maybe the people next to you, or maybe it's me, I don't know. But the point is, you don't choose your family when you're a Christian. You don't choose your family in real life either. That's just the way it is. And yet we're called to love our families. We're called to live sacrificially loving lives for our families. So look around. If you are a Christian in this room and you see other Christians, people that have been brought from death to life, that is somebody that you are called to love. That's what our Father wants us to do. That's what it looks like to live for the approval of God when it comes to sacrificing for others. It's not about your choice. It's about knowing who you are and what family you belong to. Man, I think this is really what we want to do, you know? You know, I said like, oh, it's tough because we don't all like see eye to eye on everything. This is what we want to do because I was thinking about it. I think that we, individually as a whole, whatever, I think we are sick of looking for the approval of other people in Christian community. It can be so exhausting to go around at Salt and just look for, man, I hope these people like me. Otherwise, this is going to suck. Man, I hope that people like me so that I will enjoy my time on leadership or that my connection group will go well or that people will ask me to hang out more, for goodness sake. I hope that people like me. Guys, just imagine if we saw ourselves as brothers and sisters first. Just imagine if we saw ourselves as Christians first and then, you know, basketball fans later, or what we study isn't what bonds us as much as what our family bloodline is. There are so many things that we look for in one another. How we dress, how we talk, what kind of music we like. That is what our flesh wants to bond together, but we have something so much better than that. Guys, just imagine a community where you could look to the right and the left in this room and feel loved by one another. That you could love somebody not based on how they look or act or anything that they could bring to the table for you. Anything at all. But the person who's sitting next to you, who doesn't do anything that you like, literally annoys you like crazy, they do nothing to benefit your life, you're supposed to love that person. And I believe that this community can embrace that. I really do. I think that we, when we are living for the approval of God, we can finally see each other as family. And man, this is so hard because we are so afraid of being uncomfortable. I'm so afraid of being uncomfortable. When the first sign of frost hits on your pillow, you get up and you book it inside to a heated cabin. That's just a metaphor for all of our lives right there. You know? Like, that is what I do all the time. There is a family marked by sacrificial love, marked by that love of Jesus. And we're supposed to show that to one another. So being in this family, God expects us to love one another sacrificially if we are to experience that full joy of community together, right? The last point that Paul is trying to make in this passage is that living for God's approval means working hard, right? Really simple. It means that we are to work hard. So look at verse 9. For you remember, brothers, our labor and toil. We worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you while we proclaim to you the gospel of God. What Paul is saying in this verse is being a Christian doesn't actually, you know, make your work on this earth less important or irrelevant for that matter. It actually kind of makes it more important. All right? When Paul was in Thessalonica, they were like, you know, a new church, and it's assumed that they didn't have that much capital to start this church. They didn't have that much money to pay Paul for preaching all day and winning converts to the church and growing the church. So Paul had to get a second job. That's what he's talking about here. He actually built tents at night, which I guess was a job back then. You would build tents. And so he was preaching in the synagogue all day, trying to win over people for Jesus. And then at night, he was building tents so that he would not be a burden to any of his, you know, new church members, his new family in Thessalonica. He was willing to exhaust himself, literally work all day and night, literally willing to exhaust himself for the sake of the gospel so that the church could grow. So what does that actually have to do with living for God's approval? Here's the big deal about that. God is actually your boss. Yeah, legit. God is actually your boss. Do you guys know that work was God's idea? A perfect idea. You look back at the garden, you look at Eden, you look at Adam. There was work, man. That was before there was sin. That was before, you know, the world had fallen. Work was a part of God's perfect plan. And I think, man, I am by far the most guilty person I know of this. I hate to work. I really do. I like to have fun and whatever. Do nothing, even anything can be better than work to me sometimes. I'm just not naturally that type of guy. You know, I just don't like it. It's hard for me to find joy in doing something that I don't find that important. But I think the reason I hate working has more to do with my own sin than the actual work that I was, you know, supposed to do. So if God invented work, that means he created, you know, this God who knows all, sovereign God. He has created your specific work that you are in even right now. For you guys taking summer classes like me, God knows that every single one of those homework problems in your Spanish, man, was given to you for a reason. He is the boss over literally every single thing that you are called to do in your work life, in your school life, whatever task, however menial it may be, whatever assignment, however boring and begrudging it might be, that was put in front of you by your boss, who is God. There is not an authority or a teacher, good or bad, honestly, on this earth that was not put there on purpose by God. Not one. How different would your work look? How different would my work look if I knew that God was my boss and he was right next to me? You know, I think I would work a lot better. I think the worst job I ever had was working at Chick-fil-A in the back. The front, everybody's like smiling and stuff, like, hey, my pleasure, man. Like I love my job so much. But if you go to the back of Chick-fil-A, people literally are as sweaty as I am right now. Like, they're just, it's hot, it's sticky, it's fast. You have to do everything perfectly because they're really clean and professional and stuff. And, like, people order so much stinking chicken. Like, you got to cook. Did anybody else here work at Chick-fil-A? No way. Nobody. Whatever. Okay, it was literally a terrible job. And I would just walk in there. I had that punk teenage attitude every time I walked through the door. I would even this is hot. I'm going to roll up my sleeves and unbutton my shirt and just fill chicken nuggets in boxes without smiling for as long as I could. I would be back there cutting lemons to make lemonade and would get in my eyes and I would just want to stab something. Like, I was so angry while I worked there. And sure enough, my boss would walk back there, and he was great. And I would smile real quick, like, how's it going, Jeremy? We're good. Yeah, making chicken, making lemonade. Everything's great. And my demeanor and my whole disposition would change completely. Or I would be all angry and this is a total side note. I would like drop a chicken nugget, like, oh no, dang, I dropped some nuggets. And Connor Glenn also worked with me. He would just walk up and take them off the floor. Just, I mean, covered in just literally trash and just eat them all the time. That stuff brightened up my day. But my point was, when my boss was there and I could like see who I was working for, it made it a lot easier to work hard, you know? When I knew that it wasn't just like for some nagging mom with a minivan that I was making all this chicken, but it was like actually for a good boss who like actually cared about me, then it was a lot easier to fill boxes with nuggets, man. Like, that's literally how this is. God gave you work not just so you can make your teachers happy, but he gave you this work so that you could work to the glory of him, so you could find joy and not find it begrudging to do work anymore. Guys, I can't see work as beautiful as it's supposed to be. I just can't do it. It's seriously impossible for me to work joyfully at times. And that just isn't good to hear at this moment. You know, because a lot of you guys are like me, and you're looking at this like this whole sermon for that matter, and you're like, all right, speak boldly. No, I usually look for man's approval and not God's there. Sacrificing myself for others, like my comfort, my time, all that stuff, you know, treating people like their family in here and sacrificing for them. Yeah, no, I don't do that too much. Probably not doing what God wants me to do there either. I don't know if he'd approve of the way I treat other people in this room. And then it gets to work, and for me, man, that's just like the kick in the back where it's like, dang it, I am the worst worker ever. I literally just struck out on my own sermon. And that feels like a knife. It feels like my nephew when he's like, Rai's going to be so mad at me because I lost. You know, it's that same feeling of, man, this sucks. So there's a very real problem trying to live for the approval of God, you know. It's bold. It's right in our face right now. I'm not convinced by any means that I can do it. I can't do it. Look at the last verse in verse 12, guys. We exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. I get it, all right? You charge us to walk in a manner worthy of God. That's what this whole thing has been. I get it. Work for God's approval, not man's. That makes sense. But how in the world is that supposed to be an encouragement for us? Oh, it sucks they're leaving right now. That's really bad timing. How is that supposed to be an encouragement for us? Try harder. Try harder and stop worrying about the approval of man. Just keep your head down and keep trying. No, I've done that and it doesn't work. Keep going. Speak boldly. Keep going. Sacrifice. Keep going. Work harder. I can't. It's been like 10, 12 years of that, man. I can't do it. I've tried so many times, and I come to the exact same point where I am today, that I do not live for the approval of God. What is the encouragement that Paul would possibly share with the Thessalonians that we could possibly get out of this to give us any kind of motivation at all? Look back at verse 4. But just as we have been approved by God, just simple right there, just as we have been approved by God. Guys, the biggest two letters in this entire chapter, for that matter, this entire passage, the big ED at the end of approved. Guys, Paul wasn't saying that he was working out of some lack of approval from God, that God was angry with him, that God thought any less of him if he even failed. Guys, the big point tonight that we have got to get is that we as Christians are already stamped approved by God. All caps, big ED on the end of there. We have the approval of God. And this changes everything in this passage, in our lives, in the way we interact with each other. Guys, we have the approval of God. This is the most exciting news I think that I ever get to say into a microphone, for that matter. We are approved. Guys, what should I have told my nephew? Go back to that story. What? Dude, Micah. You think that you losing a soccer game, that you doing terrible in a soccer game, that you quitting soccer for that matter, you think that that is going to change my approval of you? You think that my love for you and the way I view you as my very nephew, you think that changes because you lost? You already have my approval. How much more compelling would that sound? How much more excited would Micah go out play soccer when he knows that I already 100% approve of him? That nothing will change. And that's just me, guys. That, like, he might get over that. Who cares about that? But the approval of God, how much more boldly should we speak if we know I already have the approval of God? Oh, I don't have to be concerned about the approval of man. Oh, I can actually lay down my life for my brothers and sisters and love people who are completely different from me because I am 100% approved by God. I can work hard in tiny menial tasks that I don't think make any sense in this life because I am working out of a love and approval that nobody can take away. That God who tests our hearts, the creator of everything, approves of us. How do we know, all right? You're like, all right, is everybody approved? How do I know if I'm approved by God? Does this apply to me? Guys, the answer, as always, is just found in Jesus. God became man, guys. This is the gospel. And he lived a perfect life. And what that means when he lived a perfect life is he never, ever, ever failed to speak boldly. He had boldness every time it was needed. Jesus never failed to work hard. The God of the universe became a carpenter. Does that, like, do anything to you? And I think, and I'm too proud for my... The God of the universe came as a man and perfectly sacrificed himself for us. We think that, you know, talking to somebody who's different from us is a big form of sacrifice. Jesus died for us. He died the death that we should have died. He was perfect. He didn't deserve it. And us and our failure to live for the approval of God, our sin, we deserve to die. And Jesus took our place. And he said, when he rose from the grave 3 days later, he said, if you have faith in me, if you believe that I was perfect and that I beat death and came back from the grave, if you believe in that and that alone, my boldness is given to you. My sacrificial love is given to you. My work ethic is given to you. When God looks at you, Christian, he sees somebody who is covered in that reputation, covered in that resume, whatever. You are approved by God. And there is nothing we can do about it. So this weighty list, man, it just flips on its head. This is not a weighty set of commands for us to go do anymore. This is a joy that we get to live out. This is not just our duty as Christians to live, you know, not for the approval of man. Guys, we are living out of perfect approval from a perfectly powerful and loving God. A friend told me on the phone today, dude, it's not about feeling good enough. It's not about feeling that you've spoke boldly enough. It's not about feeling that you're loving enough. It's not about feeling that you work hard enough. It's about knowing that Jesus' death on the cross was good enough. So if we are approved by God, we are free to speak boldly, we are free to love others sacrificially, and we are free to work hard simply by the grace of Jesus. So we should be really, really excited about this. Yeah? It's summer, man. Like, this is like the most, I hope like the first part kind of like made you feel kind of weighed down like it did for me. And then grace, man, grace. Like, this is for you. This is for me today that, like, I don't have to leave here worrying about how good I'm going to do at following these commands. Guys, grace, man. God approves of you and we get to celebrate that. So stop living in fear. Stop living for your own comfort. Stop living just half-hearted lives. We are approved by the only one who matters. So let's pray. Let's worship. God, I just thank you that the gospel is just so practical to us that, I could just think about being approved by God forever. God, I need to hear this tonight so badly from your word that I've been just miserable this summer at times. I have failed so many times to live for, you know, the things that you want me to live for. I've been so concerned with what other people think of me. I've been so afraid and so comfortable. And God, I show up tonight like everybody else, just needing grace. And that's sweet because you freely give it. God, your death on the cross was enough. And we want to accept that now. God, if we've never done that before, if we've done it 1,000 times, God, we want to rejoice that we are free by the approval of God to live this life and just have a ton of fun. So, Lord, be praised tonight, God.